Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Oh, hello, Daz.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Apparently, I'm somewhere between chipper and chirpy, which is a word I made up earlier on when we were speaking.
Yeah, I like it. It feels like chipper on steroids, which is a good place to be, I think.
Yes, fantastic. anyway, we're back. Hey, did you know, I looked at the, I was hoping for some amazing news, but we're about 20 views short of 4,000 views now. Well, listens. Yeah, you don't view a podcast, do you? What am I talking about? We are professionals. No, you listen to podcasts, which is short of 4,000 listens or downloads.
That's great. Well, it's growing, isn't it? And actually, I had some feedback this week from a listener.
Okay.
And there was a complaint, which is the first one. The first one I'm going to go public about.
Right.
It was a gentle complaint, though, and actually, I it's my fault because I used the word English when I meant British on our last podcast, and when it came out of my lips, I realized that I didn't mean English, I meant British, and I was called on it by a colleague, friend and a colleague who lives in Scotland, who pointed out that actually didn't I mean British, which I did. So for those of you that were offended by my clumsy use of language, I am sorry. It was just my brain and my lips were not well connected. So
look, I would have guessed you'd be a Scots person who said that, actually.
Have you ever tried
to explain to Americans, you know, the concept of England, Great Britain, the United Kingdom and blah? It's complicated, isn't it?
I'm not sure I understand it, actually, but it is complicated. Yeah. It's one of the wonderful things that make up this tapestry of an island of ours.
Great Britain, absolutely.
Have you ever noticed when you have to apply for your ESTA, or, you know, when you're applying online in the US? We've talked about this last week, hadn't we, about globalization, how you're not 100% sure whether we're down as Great Britain or United Kingdom or England, because they're interchangeable, actually. Well, not England, of course, because I've just made that error, but you know what I mean.
It's interchangeable on some systems out there, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So the podcast, The Squid, is now two grumpy old men moaning about systems and processes and language around the world.
Well, I did ask you that question actually last week, didn't I? Because someone asked me, as a double act, who did we relate to? You know, who were our inspirations, which I was a bit taken aback by, because I'm not sure we intended to be like anybody. But you I thought came up with quite a good.
Well, I say we were like Waldorf and Stutler on the Muppets. Yeah, and, you know, arguing but agreeing at the end. I think they were a fabulous couple of characters.
They were, yeah. So I'm the old bald one that's grumpy about everything, am I?
Shall we move on? Shall we?
Yeah,
shall
let's
we
go.
Going?
Yes. So Peter, I believe it's your turn this week, isn't it, to come up with a topic for us?
Yep.
So, Peter, what is the squid of the day?
Well, there's a problem with that, Daz. I'm not sure I can say what the squid of the day is. I'm not even sure I have the right to talk about it. I'm a bit concerned that anything I say is have no value.
I don't understand, Peter.
Well, what I want to talk about is imposter syndrome.
Oh.
You see that? You see what I did there?
Very good.
So whilst you panically think about that one, just for anybody who doesn't know what it is, it's interesting. The definition I found, the best one, I think, is the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or has been legitimately achieved because of one's own efforts or skills.
It's a very interesting topic. Can I ask you why you've picked it?
Well, it's interesting. I picked it because it's something I've come across a number of times in my little world of project management. It's not a little world. There are millions of us out there. But it seems to be a topic amongst many people, but it seems to be something that project managers have a lot of concern about in many cases. And I, you know, I'm going to talk about myself for a little while here, but as you know, I do the occasional presentation, knocked out occasional book, and I've been called many things. I've been called professor, which is quite exciting. I did have to point out that was completely wrong on the grounds that I quit at A-levels or GCSEs. I've been called a guru, which is like well over-flattering, really. But Someone also calls me expert is another term that's used, and I've always sort of balked at that one on the grounds that, well, I'm not sure I'm an expert on project management, but I, perhaps I have an ability to describe, articulate, communicate complex ideas, some degree complex ideas, in simple ways that people take on board. And I very much speak to the masses when I talk about project management. I'm not in a sort of deep science space, complex world, but it does. I kind of thought, well, this is interesting because I thought about it not so long ago. I was about to go on stage, but why am I here? Why am I about to do this? And what gives me the right to do this? And there's all these people out there, or perhaps. Well, most of them are probably better qualified than me in many ways. And so it kind of struck me that, how much all of us are in any way hampered or slowed down by some element of the imposter syndrome. And so therefore I kind of did a little bit of research about it before the call, because I kind of, thought it'd be a good conversation, but I'm not sure it would flow particularly well. So I am prepared. And the research I've done, and I will let you get a word in edgeways in a minute, the research I've done, as ever, has been very thorough, and I went to Glamour magazine
it's your publication of choice, of course, Peter.
Well, can I point out I was once featured in Glamour magazine?
Oh, I see. in what capacity, Peter?
In what capacity? No, I think it was when my book The Lazy Winner came out, and they did an article about one of their reporters. Trying to live in a productive, lazy way for an entire week. I think that's the Glamour. I couldn't find it, so it was so long ago. But I do remember it's Glamour magazine. I was very excited, and I think on the same page as I think Brad Pitt was also mentioned. So that was a kind of claim to fame. But we're going off piece. Before I go into the thoughts that Glamour magazine put forward, I mean, do you have any sort of reaction? Are you reading from this topic?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can relate to this topic from lots of angles, actually. I think it's a good one, because I would suggest that sort of anyone who takes time to evaluate themselves, be self-critical, has levels of self-awareness, which are important, I think, as you go through life and you develop your careers and your relationships, that I think the imposter syndrome affects lots of people. And I've done some coaching in my time, and it's a thing that people have a view of themselves which is different from the way they're viewed, and it can be crushing. It can limit people's growth, their ability to do new things, forge new relationships, go for promotions. And so I think it's a really interesting area of self-development that is worth talking about. Hmm. And I'd perhaps like to reflect a little bit as to where do we think it comes from as a sort of manifestation? So what causes someone to have imposter syndrome, do you think? I mean, I have a view on this, but what do you think, Peter? I'd like to know.
I think there's, we probably hit it most, and it's interesting. There are a number of types of imposter syndrome, which I hadn't really considered beforehand. So I will go through those shortly. But from my own point of view, I think it's one of almost a fear of exposure that actually you're not what you're there for. You're not what's other people perceive you for. That you can be found out, that actually you're a bit of a fraud.
Well, and so, okay, let's look at that. So, why fear? What is fearful about that? I mean, my trying to answer my own question, I think there's a couple of areas that cause people to be vulnerable to this as an expression of self. I think one is their personality traits, I think. So I think there are some personality traits that people have that lend them towards having imposter syndrome. A couple that I've met in my time, one is a perfectionist. If you have a perfectionist, by definition, they're never satisfied with what they've done. And that can extrapolate itself into, I'm not good enough for this job. I'm not good enough for that person, because they're using their own standards to judge their own performance in an environment where actually no one else is. So I think that's one. Yep. I think experts sometimes fall into this, where you've got an expert, and you know, sometimes when you become more expert, you know, the more you know, you realize the less you really know. And I think experts can tend to imposter syndrome because, you know, everyone around may consider them an expert. Because they're an expert, they realize how little they know. And I think that can tend towards this sort of phenomenon. And then there's the devil on your shoulder, you know, your background, your, you know, the way you were brought up. There's something about our background, I think, that feeds into this. And in fact, there's a coaching technique that's used to, it actually uses the word saboteurs. The premise is that we all carry around saboteurs on our shoulders, and we've all got these saboteurs. And it's the little man that sits on your shoulder saying, you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not strong enough. Those self-doubt moments that we all have. And for some of us, it can be a continual monologue. And what's interesting is when you stop and listen to that voice, it's come from somewhere. And I think one of the places it comes from sometimes is as we grow up, we develop defense strategies to deal with things that have caused us difficulties in our life. It might have been, you know, without being too heavy and without being a pocket psychologist about it, you know, it could be a bullying incident. It could be a lack of, love, perhaps from parents. It could be something that happened that caused someone to be exposed in a situation that they never want to have happen again. And so people have this carapace around them, don't they? People develop this scar tissue. They develop this protection mechanism, which as you grow up, it is valuable because it stops you getting hurt. It sort of protects you from the vagaries of life. But as an adult who perhaps is a more fully functioned, rounded, mature perspective, has perspective, these carapaces are often inappropriate. You don't need them anymore, but they are who you are. They come from where you've come from. And so I think these saboteurs that sort of whisper in your ear, actually, it's very useful to listen to them because they have helped you in your past, but they're probably not at all appropriate in your future. And I won't go on to techniques to get rid of them, but I would say that they're the two areas that I think cause this for lots of people. Personality traits.
That's very interesting. That's great. I mean, I'm going to pick you up on one point. You said that little man on your shoulder. Obviously, it could be a little lady or it could be an aardvark. It could be many things. We are diverse.
I'm using that. It's a thing, isn't it? About the, actually, that's true. The devil on your shoulder. We never really determine what sex the devil is. So, okay.
That's probably a whole new episode of the podcast, which we may or may not ever do. But I'm going to go back to Glamour magazine, because the one reason I like this, I did actually look at several sources on this, actually, but I wonder if I like it. The article was featuring a book by Dr. Valerie Young, who's the co-founder of the Imposter Syndrome Institute. And the book, in case anybody's interested in it, is The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women, Why Capable People Suffer from the Imposter Syndrome and How to Thrive in Spite of It. But Dr. Young identifies five types of imposter syndrome, and you hit two of them there very well. I mean, the first one is the perfectionist.
Okay.
There's the natural genius, the rugged individualist, the expert, and the superhero. So I'm going to quickly go through those. So you touched on the perfectionist, and this is because perfectionists kind of set a very high expectations for themselves and others, of course. And even if they hit 99% of those goals, a loss will feel like a large failure. So when mistakes happen, perfectionists question their core competence.
Yeah.
So spot on with that one. The natural genius is the way it's described is they've been top of the class for so long, they can't remember, or they have no understanding what failure is. And when suddenly problems or issues arise, they just question themselves at that point.
Yeah. Well, do you know, linking back to something we did, remember on our episode on competition, we talked about how in schools badges were given for taking part.
On
the grounds that there's a school of thought that says you actually don't want young people to feel failure earlier on. But I think that speaks to what you just said, that actually failures a life, you know, well, failure in the, with a small f, if that's a thing, you know, not catastrophic failure, but making mistakes, screwing up, learning from them, I think is a big part of development for us all. And so if you're in an environment where you haven't, because you've been protected perhaps, or you haven't put yourself out there, or you perhaps you are a genius and you just haven't been exposed to a situation where you can't prevail, I think that is that's a consequence of actually not taking risks, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I reflect on it because you know, I went to a school which is very near where I live right now, having come all the way back to Sanders where I live. But I remember when I went to senior school, you know, I was top of my class in junior school, you know, and that was my mindset. And we went to senior school, and I was suddenly put in a class with 29 other people of, at that point, apparent equal ability. And it was a kind of very strange period of time to go through. Like, actually, I'm not automatically top of the pecking order anymore. And it was, you know, personal front, I sunk to the very bottom of the class for a couple of years before I started to climb my way back up again. But yeah. That's just me.
There are so many things I want to say right now, but I'm going to control myself. We talk about, you know, big fish, little pool, becoming little fish, big pool, and the psychological sort of transition that happens for children that go through that, but also individuals when you join organisations. I mean, how many times have we employed really talented people because they bring an expertise that is perhaps slightly different from the expertise that we have, they have a different perspective, or perhaps they're just an expert practitioner, perhaps on another platform. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very tricky for people to come into a role where they've been an expert, they've been a big fish in a little pool, and they bring that expertise to a new organization where the language is different, the technology is different, the mores are different, the tribes are different, and they suddenly, you know, they're it's their first day at school again, and it's very destabilizing. And I think that can cause imposter syndrome with new employees in a way that there are tricks, not tricks, but there are techniques, I think, to deal with these feelings of self-doubt. But, you know, I've said to many people in my career, you know, well done you for putting yourself in a position where you feel uncomfortable, because trust me, that's a great place to be in terms of learning and developing. And you could have stayed where you were and you could have continued to be an expert, but you wouldn't have grown. And I think, you know, you've had an opportunity here to go and do something new. You've taken it. You feel very uncomfortable because you don't know where to go for anything. You don't know what to do. You're worried about the fact you're not adding value. But, you know, it's a time thing. It's just give yourself a break and it will come. So, yeah.
I think that's a lovely semi-segue into type three, which is the rugged individualist. What it says here is that these kind of imposters struggle to reach out when they need assistance because they feel that if they can't do it themselves, then they are failing in that sense. Their skill set is in some way lacking.
So there we go. I mean, this is a personality type that I think, you know, when they hit issues, it is vulnerable to this sort of work. I'm just wondering how many of these personality types, you know, how many ticks in the boxes you get from these, Peter, because, you know, I think you're three so far.
Oh, thank you for that. Well, I'm going to reflect on the rugged individualist. That's something I've seen in the project world, that when project managers take up their first sort of role, and it can be quite a simplistic project, and maybe it's, you know, in our world, it's often, you know, tech-based in some form. And they can, they, you know, if it's not too complex and the team's not big, they can deal with stuff because they can throw their background into the role. But when they're given anything large and complicated, they suddenly are out of their depth because, you know, they can't solve it themselves anymore. They have to use the team. And that's a significant maturity step.
Yeah. Yeah. No, agreed. I'm dying to hear the other two now, Peter.
Okay. Well, the next one is one that you picked up on, although you kind of bundled it in with the first one. But the fourth type is the expert type. So this is someone who's likes to spend time researching, gathering as much information as possible, and like to come into sort of new knowledge and expertise, and regularly spend time looking for ways to improve. But this drive to become an expert can trigger imposter syndrome, holding them back because they feel that there's still knowledge out there and they never get to the end of learning. Well, we never get to the end of learning, but this becomes a problem in the world of the expert. And I know you're going to say, well, well done, Peter, you don't qualify in that area.
You beat me to it, yeah.
I found listeners, that it's on this podcast, it's easier and less painful to insult myself these days.
But it's quicker, isn't it? I mean,
it's quicker. It gets it out of the way.
Because you know what I'm going to say. But no, I'm teasing you. Of course, you have great expertise. Because actually, yeah, you've got another book out, haven't you, Peter?
Oh, did we talk about this last time? Yes, there's a new book, Project Team and Analytics, or Team Analytics, I think it is, whatever. Yeah, let's move on. Let's dwell.
No, it's impressive, Peter. I bet you don't have imposter syndrome with your writing, do you?
Well, I can't. Yes, I do sometimes. I mean, you know, I wrote that book about AI, and we will come on to AI listeners very soon. We are very excited about it. But I wrote that book about AI, and I was a bit very nervous about it because I'm not an AI expert by any means. It's a vast, complicated world. But I felt it was important that my profession started talking about it because it's going to have significant impact very quickly. And so I felt I need to write about it. But I was sitting there waiting, published, waiting for people to shoot it down on the grounds that, like, you know, I was talking nonsense or didn't understand the subject matter or whatever. So, yeah, I do get imposter syndrome a little bit.
Good to hear. Okay, so what's number five?
Superhero.
Oh, there we go. Another tick in the box, Peter. Oh,
well, thank you for that. This is where, what we got. This is where people push themselves to work harder than everyone around them to prove they're not imposters. I haven't got that one. There's expectations for themselves higher than their expectations from others. So, they can get overwhelmed by that. So that's the kind of five types: perfectionist, natural genius, rugged individualist, expert, and superhero. So it's a lot more complicated than I thought it was. I thought it was just one state.
So given that, you know, we've agreed that people are vulnerable to this mode of thinking, and I think it's debilitating. I think it holds people back. It certainly gives people sort of anxiety and sleepless nights. What do you want to offer some solutions to our listeners that are saying,
I just thought we'd go on a downer and not give anybody a follow-up on this one. Just leave them hanging there. There is a follow-up podcast that is chargeable to get you out of this depression. But I will do that, actually. But before I do that, it's also, I think, a matter of understanding there are levels to this. So, yeah, when I'm about to go on stage, sometimes I look out and there's a large audience and so forth. And I might have a momentary flash of, why are you doing this? What gives you the right to go on stage and talk to 1,000 people? But it passes. I mean, there is a momentary imposter syndrome, probably linked in some way to, you know, kind of nerves or whatever doing it, although I don't generally get too nervous. But it's passing. It's fleeting. It's not dragging me down. But then there are other people, as you suggest, who do get completely, you know, fully burdened by this, hampered by it, and that does impact them over an extended period of time.
Yeah. Perhaps before we come on to, you know, how do you ameliorate this, or how do you deal with it, or what are, you know, just reflecting on my coaching experience, these saboteurs, this imposter syndrome, I think that there are actually, like the psychometric profiles, ways to characterize the insecurities that you have. And, you know, going back to what I said earlier, you know, these are derived perhaps from personality traits or family background. And I've done a little bit of work with saboteurs. So that's, if you like, a manifestation of insecurities. And the reason for doing this is just sort of to shine a light into that murky corner of why do you feel so insecure? And I've just dug my notes out, actually, while you were talking. So there are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in this particular psychometric profile. There are nine types of imposter syndrome, which have been characterized, that you can assess yourself against.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And there are techniques, actually different techniques, for dealing with each of them. So would you like me to go through them?
What, you? Yeah, sure. I offered up five types, and you're going to give me nine characteristics now.
Well, no, I think yes, that's right. You offered us five types of personality, mm-hmm, that are vulnerable to imposter syndrome. I'm offering you nine varieties of imposter syndrome.
Okay, fine. And I have five ideas about how to overcome it. So I think we have a nice shape to this conversation.
Okay, so I'll go through them quickly, and perhaps just stop me if they don't make sense. So, and again, like all psychometric profiles, you know, this is not who you are. It's sort of how your imposter syndrome manifests itself. So we have the pleaser, the hyper-rational, the controller, the restless, the hyper-achiever, the victim, the stickler, the hyper-vigilant, and the avoider. So these are just names to describe behavioral types that tend to characterize people, tend to be the way what you've described as imposter syndrome sort of manifest in what I've described as saboteurs. So,
Wow, okay. Can you just go through them again, slow, for the listeners so they can
right,
actually.
pleaser, for example, you know, is a saboteur which manifests itself as you tend to want to please people all the time, i.e. you know, you tend to avoid conflict. You tend to want to mediate. You know, so there are huge positives in terms of personality type manifestations in terms of social interaction here. It's about, you know, wanting to be liked. It's about wanting to be kind. It's about, you know, wanting to solve problems. That and but it and it manifests as a saboteur because the upshot of all of that might sound incredibly positive in terms of your relationships and your, you know, your work style, but it means that you might tend to avoid confrontation because that feels like failure, you know. And you know, again, without being a cod psychologist, you know, the theory is here, this often comes from perhaps a background where as a child perhaps you're exposed to mum and dad fighting a lot, or perhaps separating, and you know, that created some pain that actually you don't want to, subconsciously you don't want to recreate again. And so you carry forward that pleaser sort of saboteur on your shoulder as you go into adulthood, and it becomes part of who you are in a way that in certain roles is actually holding you back. You know, hyper rational, it's a version of, you know, the I suppose it's a version of the perfectionist. It's about just wanting to bring everything into an order that you can then perhaps, you know, apply your perhaps really great analytical skills to. You know, the controller is about feeling very uncomfortable where situations move outside of your control, and so you tend to have a personality type that wants to own everything, that wants to, you know, manage everything and wants to manage people around you, and so on. And so these just are manifestations of saboteurs that sit on your shoulder that we all have. And it's just quite interesting. And the point of this from a coaching point of view is when you spot that's happening, and here we go, let me just quickly flip to a technique. You know, once you hear that little devil on your shoulder saying, you know, you should avoid this situation. This is getting rough. You know, you don't like conflict. I would suggest you back off here. And actually, you know, you're right in what you're saying, but actually, that's not going to land well. That's going to go down very badly. You can say to this devil on your shoulder, "I recognize why you're saying that, because you know you're my pleaser, and actually, I don't think that's relevant, so I'm going to ignore you." And so you can just mentally choose to avoid the devil on your shoulder, and you can then help yourself forward by saying, "I am good at this. I've done this before. I know what I've done. My colleagues respect me. I believe, you know, my boss approves of me. Look at that promotion I got last time." So, you know, talk yourself up a bit, give yourself credit for what you can achieve, and then re-engage. And that interaction could take seconds. You know, it doesn't, you don't have to go off and take a holiday and debate it. You know, it's about recognizing that your saboteur is talking to you. Say, "I hear you. I know why you said that, but I'm going to ignore you. And by the way, I'm pretty good at this. I've done this before." And give yourself permission to engage. So
Yeah, very
that's
good.
a technique there, Peter, just for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, it actually brings us to kind of how you might address this, because you kind of touched on it already. But I think, what sort of one of the foundational things is, well, if you think you're an imposter, where's the evidence that says you're an imposter, or counter, more likely counter that, where's the evidence that you're not an imposter? And it's presenting yourself with the facts, either directly or indirectly from other people.
Yeah, it's I think it's about hearing that insecurity being whispered in your ear, and then, as you say, recognize your strengths. Give yourself credit. Also, perhaps accept the fact that you've got to be practical. You know, you can't have perfection because it's a rough and tumble world out there, and it never quite works out the way you think it's going to do. And just say that's fine, and then get on with it.
Yeah, and that was the second one that I had on the list, actually, which was, being realistic about the situation. If like for example, the perfectionist or whatever, or even the expert is, perfectionist, you can't have perfection. The expert, you cannot know everything, but, be realistic about what, being a non-imposter, if you like, it is. And it's the fact that, it can't be to that extreme.
Yeah.
Another piece of advice which comes out of Glamour magazine, of course, is it's all about sharing the feelings. And it sounds a bit corny to begin with, but actually, by kind of sharing that you have this kind of this personal feeling of being an imposter, the imposter syndrome, but actually by talking to others about it, again, it's part of it is going to hopefully give you the kind of the evidence that that isn't the case. But it also offers something, and it's actually, it did go on to talk about how you can get help here. You can talk to people, and coaching was one of the techniques that was advised to help those that suffer with a more extreme imposter syndrome.
Yeah, well, I think everyone should have a coach, actually, because it's hard. It's hard doing this work on yourself, and it often, I think you can get accelerated by having someone who's not you, and that you trust. Putting a mirror up to what you're saying and playing back to you very often the idiocy of what you've just said, and as you just said, providing the evidence of why what you just said was actually ridiculous, because look at this other evidence, and we're all different, of course, but we're also very good at perhaps not accepting praise, not recognizing our strengths, and it I think it's helpful if you have someone who can reflect with you, as you said, on what's going on, and talking about it is obviously a prerequisite of that. So no, I'm a great one for that, actually. Sorry, you're going through a list, but just thinking about the fact
that
it is, so is having imposter syndrome, then is it a good or a bad thing? So imagine a world where no one had any doubt. Imagine a world where everyone thought they were right and acted accordingly. Wouldn't that be shocking?
Yeah, that would be horrible.
So perhaps, an imposter syndrome is part of what it is to be human. It sort of damps down.
You're so good. You're segueing into my next point. It's brilliant.
Okay. Well, yeah, well, I was just, thinking about maybe it just damps down, our excesses and allows for us to engage with every other fully formed, fully flawed human being out there. I don't know.
Well, the fascinating point that this article made, and I did really thought this was great, because it was talking about success, and if you've got success, then that's a counter to the fact that you're an imposter. But due to our kind of survival instinct, we are actually hardwired to remember negative rather than retaining positive, because it is about survival instinct. If I remember the negative, I'm not going to do that again. If I find that's hot, I'm not going to touch it again. It's hot. All of that. So actually, we are in some way programmed to have to deal with this imposter situation.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's hardwired. It's to stop us getting eaten by that saber-toothed tiger, isn't it? It's and we carry those stresses in our psyche. And it manifests itself as all these doubts, and we've only had a few hundred years as manifesting as we do today as these sort of inverted commas sophisticated IT literate, fast moving, big data, large brained transformation people. We're not genetically designed to do this sort of work, and so I think where the modern world brings these pressures on us, I think it comes out in very weird ways. which is why I think it's helpful to talk about it, as you just said, and develop strategies to tell your little devil on your shoulder to shut up and let you get on with the work.
and I think that brings us to a reasonable conclusion, in the sense that, you know, imposter syndrome is a real thing, but it's in people's minds. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily really in other people's perceptions of you. I think, you know, accepting the different types of people out there, the different kind of, you know, situations that you might become, you know, or undergo this kind of imposter syndrome experience. You've talked, and I've talked as well, you know, getting help, guidance, coaching is an excellent way to support you during this. Talking to people, gathering insight and evidence from other people as well, how they actually do perceive you is very valuable. It's one of the great things of being on a team that's very honest and open with you. And I think, you know, the last point in that particular article was, you know, there is an acceptance here as well, that this is just a thing. You know, we're hardwired, as I said, to remember the negatives. And so it's not going to go away. It's not like you can cure it. It's more that it's one of these things you can manage it.
Yeah, it's not an illness, is it? It's part of who we all are, and so it's about self awareness, I think, and as you've been saying, we've been discussing ways to cope with the idiosyncrasies that have been instilled in us by our background and our personality traits.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm conscious of the fact that both our listeners get bored after 30 minutes or so.
Yeah. I'm amazed you got all of that from Glamour magazine, Peter.
I know, absolutely. They're probably going to sue me now.
So. I'm going to get my topic next week from horse and hounds.
Brilliant. But one thing I would like to just finally finish with is, and it's, I'm using your words, Daz, I think you said that, you know, one way is that, you know, your boss can promote you, apparently, to help you overcome this imposter syndrome. So I'm just putting that back out there.
I think you're misquoting me.
I think I can go back and find that and insert that into the podcast.
You wouldn't want me to make your imposter syndrome worse, Peter.
Excellent. Well, Daz, it's been a fascinating topic. I know we've only touched on it really quite lightly. It's bigger and more complex than probably, well, I certainly realised in size by looking at it. But I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate your thoughts.
No, likewise. And I'm going to go off and go and take a subscription to Glamour magazine now, Peter.
Excellent. Thank you. Excellent. Maybe get a back copy. I'll try and find out which one it was.
Very good. Thanks, Peter.
All right. Thanks, Daz.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.